Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. My name is Eric Teamer, and I want to welcome you to Common Sense Conversations, the show that attempts to break the myth that common sense is so rare, it's a superpower. So tonight we are in for a treat. It's been a couple of weeks since I last was on, and I want to come back and just kind of bring some things into perspective and given the light of what's going on in our current situation. We are moving towards a different type of mentality and political consciousness. And in that, we are also moving into what we've seen that, you know, people are starting to take things into their own hands. We're having issues with social injustice, dealing with police brutality, which has been an ongoing thing for almost the inception of the police force. And we'll get into that later tonight. But we are talking about guns in the black community tonight. One of the things that I want to touch on is definitely getting involved in how you can be prepared and be a little bit more knowledgeable with this topic and with the subject of guns going into the new presidential election and going in towards what they call the new norm. I guess that's the best way to do it. So tonight I invite you to be a part of this conversation and hopefully many more. But tonight, if you're interested and you want to be a part of tonight's conversation, you can. You can call in. The number is 516-418-5878. Again, that number is 516-418-5878. And if you're on Facebook, you can tune in. Check out Common Sense Conversations. You can find the link there. That's Common Sense Conversations, and you type that in and you'll be directed to the page. You can like that page and subscribe to it. Also, if you're on Twitter, you can find us at Ain't So Common, and that's hashtag Ain't So Common. But again, we're going to get into it, and joining me tonight, if I can pull this brother up, you have a good friend of mine, Will. I call him Will, but Lattimore, the gunslinger. Let's call him that. But if you can hear me, I'm going to try to cue you up right now. It's been a minute. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Uh-oh. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. There we go. Okay, we're in business, brother. All right. So how you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We are talking about guns tonight, and you and I have been talking about guns almost pretty much since we met over guns. How about that? So,
right.
Yeah. So, I you know, one of the things I want to do is just allow you to take the opportunity to introduce yourself and just answer a simple question. You know, what got you involved in the firearms and firearm industry, or just give a brief background of who you are.
All right. So, hello, everybody. As he stated, my name is William Lattimore, or you can refer to me as Lattimore the Gunslinger. What got me into firearms? I was in the military for 7 years, and it's in there that I sort of developed a love for firearms, a respect for firearms. So when I got out of the military, I moved to Texas, and the first thing I bought out here was a gun. So, I wasn't as into firearms as I am now. It wasn't until I started my current job working in armed security that I got into firearms more, as far as for personal defense, just a love of firearms.
Okay, that's good. And my history is almost somewhere, I won't even say the same. I don't know if it's the same, but no military background. My first, I can honestly tell you, going back when I was a child, remembering those days when my grandfather I had a shotgun, and he kept it in the closet. And, you know, as a child, you're curious. You sneak in, you take a peek at it, and you want to see what it is. You're scared to touch it because you don't know what it's about. Fast forward, teenager, or I want to say that young adult. Let me go young adult in my early 20s, early to mid 20s. My first gun was a handgun, a 45 caliber handgun. And that led to eventually fast forward to late adulthood, I guess you could say, and the formation of a gun club, forming a gun club, putting together a gun club because of the fact that in my area, there was no gun club, or at least I didn't think so, as far as one that looked like me, talked like me. When I say that, there was no black gun club. There was nothing that
I was
looking at was organizations that, you know, in Mississippi, they, you know, they celebrate the Confederate flag. And to, you know, if you're a black person and if you're a black person who's kind of aware of your history, you typically will stay away from Confederate flags and organizations that promote and use the Confederate flag as a symbol that they want to stand behind. So I backed away from that and eventually got into, you know, I said, you know, if there's nothing there, I'll find out how to make my own. And and that's what it basically did. We ended up in 2018, April 2018, the Black Lions Gun Club was created. And with that being created, you know, we started getting, you know, some people started coming in, trickling in, wanting to know about guns. And then it led to me being making a decision and saying, hey, I needed to be not only a part of a gun club, but let me find out about being an instructor. And that led to me becoming an instructor, a firearms instructor, range safety officer, which also led to a few other things, but it also led to a business. So it's, you know, everybody has a story of how they came to come into the firearms industry or come into the, you know, firearms. But it's like I've put in our description, it says, with the recent increase in firearm sales, the black community has decided to join the arms race. And I say that kind of loosely because of the fact that we have a history with the firearms. I almost want to say a love-hate relationship. So our conversation tonight centers around the black community, guns, and the unequal history that we've had with guns. We will also speak with the firearms instructors. Hopefully we'll get some other firearm, my brothers and sisters in arms, who actually go out and on the range and willing to talk about some of the things that they experience. But, you know, and they'll share their knowledge and experiences in the industry. And those are the things that and just talk about some of the things that we need to know as fire gun owners. You have a lot of people who are gun owners and don't know what to do with their firearm. They recently purchased a firearm and don't know what to do with it. So having said that, we can kind of jump off into it. I know there's some things that you talked about that we've talked about in conversations that, you know, there are points that you and I both agree on and getting involved in it. And so I'm going to kind of open the door to that conversation and see where it goes and see how far down the rabbit hole we can go with it.
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, and there's so many, and I think that in getting into the unequal history part of it, there is in a certain portion of the black community, there is a, I guess you can say, an unhealthy fear of firearms. I don't know if you agree with me on that, where firearms
totally
are used, you know, yeah, and you know, and maybe you can talk about it a little bit from your perspective, but how we see firearms in our community. In your opinion, what do you think is or some of those myths and misconceptions about firearms?
Okay, so for me, you know, I grew up in New York City. So, and anybody who's familiar with the city of New York, they know we have some of the strictest gun laws in the United States. And growing up in Brooklyn, the only people who had guns, or the only people who were presented to us that had guns, were the drug dealers, the criminals, the gangsters, and stuff like that. It was never any regular everyday person with a gun. Guns were always presented to us in a negative fashion. So a lot of us carry that into adulthood. You know, we grow up in the quote-unquote hood, and we see what guns do to the community. And so we carry that with us as a fear or aversion to firearms. But for me, thankfully, I was able to see it from a different perspective.
Okay. Well, elaborate on that. What perspectives were you able to see?
So, like I said, when I joined the military, because I joined the military at the age of, 21, 22, and I knew what a firearm was because I've seen them, but I had to learn that it wasn't this powerful thing that I didn't control. I had to learn that I control the weapon just like I control the car. And, you know, you learn to utilize these tools. So it wasn't until I moved to Texas that I gained the knowledge of what it means to be a firearm owner, a gun owner, using it for defense, seeing other black people being in the 2A community. Like, one of the first people I found out about was Coleon Noir. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, I am. I'm familiar.
So what I saw was a black man who's a gun owner, and I'm like, okay, this could be something interesting, you know? It's not the way it's perceived to be. It's not like it's this evil thing that we should all stay away from. And then also I started doing more and more research, and I learned about the Deacons of Defense. And they were African-American self-defense group, and they were founded in 1954. Of course, as we know, 1964 was the height of the civil rights era.
You're right.
And, yep, and so they were founded because of the Ku Klux Klan. Sorry. So you know, the Klan, they did their night rides to sort of terrorize black folks, and someone decided, hey, we're not going to take this. We're going to stand up for ourselves. And so, of course, the Deacons for Defense came up with this idea to defend their families and themselves, as well as other black folks, against the Klan. So me learning all of that, I saw that, there is a space for black gun ownership, and it's legal.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we kind of, like you said, the imagery that we are given when it comes to blacks and guns is always, I guess you can always view it in the illegal sense. We don't talk about, or we don't really look at the history of blacks when it comes down to owning firearms and being legally responsible for those firearms and going into it. We don't look at the fact that there are hundreds of thousands of people who serve in the military, especially black people, who carry firearms and are responsible firearms, especially, and we definitely are starting to notice the increase or the spike in firearm sales, with blacks leading, I guess you could say, leading the charts, starting to gain in sales as far as what's going on. You're starting to see more black people becoming more, I guess the pandemic has forced us to kind of take notice and be more cautious of what's going on around us and the people who are surrounding us. You're starting to see more issues, more race-related issues, where people are taking aim, you know, and again, dealing with the issue of police brutality and how those things are affecting our community and affecting people in general, but more so, you know, the conversation. Again, and I can get off into that, and I guess one of the things that I've always looked at was the idea that if you look at the history of police and the relationship between the police and the black community, it's always been a tumultuous relationship since the inception
right.
of the police. Many of us don't look at the idea, yeah, we don't look at the idea that police, some of the police organizations were formed around slave patrols. And from the slave patrol, you can have your police department in some regard. But more importantly, we don't understand that police were used as a tool to terrorize blacks and black neighborhoods. If you can do your history on it, you can also look at how, you know, again, these white officials, white government used these police officers, government agency, law enforcement agencies to, you know, basically go into towns and harass them. You mentioned the Deacons of Defense, you know, the Ku Klux Klan, and the police. And this was during a time of the Civil Rights Movement. These men who had fought in the war, I want to say World War II and also Korean War, came home and were basically trying to be law-abiding citizens, but their children also were involved in some of the civil rights movement activities. They began to protect their children, protect people who were involved in civil rights activities, but more so protect their neighborhood from terrorist organizations. And I use terrorist organizations because you have those individuals who purposely came through in the middle of the night when people were basically asleep and or just at rest, or you know, in the South, you were known. They were known. They would break in the house, pull you out of the house, and you would disappear. Emmett Till is an example. And we're seeing some of the same incidences repeating itself in certain situations. You have Ahmaud Arbery, who was running down the street and was gunned down for being suspected of, I don't even, in some situations, you don't really know what the suspicion, what they were suspected of, but because he was seen coming from a vacant house that was under construction, let me put it that way. A house that people had been going in and out of frequently just to look, and something that was not uncommon to have happen. And he had been videotaped several times going in and looking at the house and then leaving. So on that particular day, he had done it. They followed him, pretty much set up an ambush and gunned him down. You can see issues with our history with people like Tamir Rice, young boy, 11, 12 years old? And
yep, 12 years old.
Yeah, 12 years old. In his neighborhood, in a state where the law says that you can open carry. And someone made a call. Now, he was out playing by himself, that someone made a call, said that there was someone in the park playing who had a gun. The police showed up and pretty much gunned them down. We've had these incidences over and over again. And like I said, our history with guns, with police, you know, it's been an up and down. It's been, like I said, a love-hate relationship. So you have, you know, they said, 250 years after, you know, blacks were first sold into slavery, and 3 years after the Civil War, Congress decreed that, you know, they were citizens. It took 250 years before we regained that. And at that point, you know, we felt like we had a right to due process and equal protection under the Constitution. Now, that was the whole idea. That was what, you know, America was founded on, and they gave that, you know, that thought to us. Once we were free, we started to practice. We got involved in politics. We got involved in everything that was a part of the American society. And one of the things that we also participated in was the right to bear arms. You'd be amazed at how many of us, you know, decided to bear arms. But in that situation, you know, the reality is that gun ownership was often been, you know, we were punished in many states. And
right.
think you should, you know, and I don't know if you want to kind of talk about that as far as like some of the things that you've researched. And I know you've done some research on the history of gun control laws. And I know that's one of the issues that a big topic now, especially during elections, where gun control laws and gun control issues, you know, are one of the hot topics for candidates to address. Every year I've started to put it up, gun control laws right up there with Roe v. Wade as one of the hot topics. So, you know, in your opinion, I'll open the door for you. In your opinion, what are some of the things that you've looked at as far as gun control laws, the racist history of gun control laws for blacks?
So, yeah, as you stated, I've been doing just a little bit of research. And when people talk about gun control, gun control has always had a racist history. In fact, the very first gun law that I could find was in 1619. The first formal, and I'm reading this from Gun History and Second Amendment Rights by Robert J. Spitzer. It says, the first formal legislative body created by European settlers in North America was convened in the Virginia colony on July 30th, 1619, 12 years after the colony's establishment. Now, we know Virginia is, especially Jamestown, Virginia, it's very famous, and I'll get to that in a second. The first General Assembly of Virginia met in Jamestown, where it deliberated for 5 days and enacted a series of measures to govern the fledgling colony. Among its more than 30 enactments in those few days was a gun control law. So we see right here that the very first gun control law was in the colonies. And it said that no man do or sell Indians any piece, shot, or powder, or any other arms, offensive or defensive, upon pain of being held a traitor to the colony and of being hanged as soon as the fact is proved without all redemption. So we can see that very first law was already racist in nature, because it said that you can't sell, give any type of weapon to an Indian, to a native. And if they proved it, you would be hanged. So it was literally a death sentence for you to give a weapon, a firearm, or any type of offensive or defensive weapon, as they called it, to a Native American. And you have to think, why was that? Well, because you have to look at the history of the United States of America. Their fear was, if the Indians got their hands on firearms or weapons, they would rise up against them. They wanted to prevent rebellions and insurrections.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Finish up.
So, you also... And that's just for natives. We can look into the bans for black folks. In 1640 in Virginia, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I did say I was going to talk about 1619. So we know that first thing happened in July 30th, 1619. What else happened in Jamestown, Virginia in 1619, less than a month later? The first Dutch ship carrying slaves arrived in Jamestown, Virginia in 1619 as well. So you have to think they knew what they were doing when they made this law. They knew what was they already had a plan in motion. So they wanted to prevent uprisings, in my honest opinion.
Mm-hmm. So, and one of the things go ahead. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
Sorry. Then you get into their race-based gun bans. One I wanted to talk about was in Florida. This is further out. This is in 1833 in Florida. They sent out, it's the Slaves and Free Black Homes Search for Guns for Confiscation. Confiscation, the Act of February 17th, 1833, Section 1518, 1833 Florida Laws 2629. It authorized white citizen patrols to seize arms found in the homes of slaves and free blacks, and this is the key point right here, and provided that blacks without a proper explanation for the presence of the firearms be summarily punished without benefit of a judicial tribunal. So they sent out citizen patrols, not law enforcement, anything like that. They sent out citizen patrols to go into the homes, free blacks and slaves. And if they found a weapon, they were to confiscate these weapons if the free black or the slave couldn't provide a reason or a valid explanation as to why they had the guns. So we can see that the history is very, it was strategic. It was very strategic. I actually have a lot more.
I was just chiming in. I was just going to say, you know, you're right on point with that. And there are a lot of, you know, our history, like I said, our history with it and how far back it goes. Again, you talked about, you know, once we were free, and you can see the correlation. To me, I can see the correlations between what you're saying as far as the citizen patrols and their right to question, or the right to, yeah, basically question black people about their whereabouts, what they have, what they don't have. And, you know, you can see it now as you see, you know, we're in an age of the social media age where we're able to videotape and go live with situations where you have people who are questioning, you know, the average everyday citizen, where are you coming from? Who are you? What do you have? And they feel, you know, it's almost like I wouldn't want to say it's in their DNA. You know, their ancestors are just invoking them to repeat history of doing these things. You know, what are you doing with the gun? What are you doing at this house? You don't live here. I know you don't live here because I've lived in this neighborhood for X amount of years. And the person has said the same thing. You know, I've lived in this neighborhood, you know, for a period of time. Or I just recently moved here. Cops pulling into a black man's driveway and questioning where he lives. If people remember during the time when Barack Obama was president, Henry Louis Gates, a scholar, educator, was confronted and almost arrested by police because they accused him of breaking into a home, which was his. And that didn't flare up as big as most people thought it would or should have. But I remember, you know, that was the Brats and Beer issue where President Barack Obama invited the police and Henry Louis Gates to sit down and have Brats and Beer to talk this out, to work this out, which, in my opinion, should have been a situation almost like a springboard or a jump off to kind of deal with the issue that police and other people who have put us in precarious situations where our lives can be easily snuffed out because we're standing our ground. I guess that's the best way to do it. And I know you talked about in the 1600s and even during the Civil War, like in the Civil War, slaves were given, you know, before the Civil War, they said, you know, black people could own guns with the approval of their masters. And you know, in the Freedman states, you know, you could get approval from local officials on weapons. Some of those things change. Like you said, the laws changed after a while. You know, once you realize, dear God, the black man got a gun, because it made them nervous. And in some situations, it made them angry. Now, during the slave rebellions, that was when they really started making changes because, you know, again, one of the more notable ones, the ones that we talk about, Nat Turner's slave rebellion, that's when the laws began to really stop or curtail the ownership, gun ownership for black people. Because, again, Nat Turner went from plantation to plantation. And I think the biggest fear for white people, and I've heard it said over and time and time again, is the idea that if we had the same or equal power as them, they fear that we will do the same things to them that they did to us. And I think that was some of the bigger concerns, or the larger concerns with them, especially when we began to take up firearms and use firearms as well. So, I mean, like you said, there is a plethora of laws. Lawmakers in Mississippi and Florida, you mentioned Florida, they couldn't accept the idea. So, again, you had the black codes or the Jim Crow law that, you know, restricted the freedom of owning guns and other weapons, which also opened the door for white vigilantes to raid black homes and confiscate them. Like you said, citizens can, you know, everyday citizens could come in and take your gun without consequence for just barging in your home. So
When you look at like the number of gun laws in the states or colonies, and numbers of state gun laws by category, there was a list compiled between They did the research between the years 1607. To 1934 on the number of gun laws and carry restrictions. So between 1607 and 1790 in the colonies, there were five laws governing carry restrictions, and four states or colonies supported them. Mm-hmm. Then you get into the years between 1791 and 1867. Now, you always have to look at the time period. If you're looking at 1791 to 1867, what happened in 1865? You know, you have the Emancipation Proclamation, the freeing of the slaves. So notice I said between 1607 and 1790, there were only five carry restrictions. Between 1791 and 1867, that number jumped up to 31. 31 laws governing carry restrictions between 1791 and 1867, and the number of states supporting it was 19. You always have to look at the times of things, and it leads me to believe that within that time, they were like, hold on, we got to do something about this, because we can't just have, as they call it, Negroes out there running around willy-nilly with firearms. So this, like we've stated, gun control is racist in history nature. It was never about them. It was always about us. Mm-hmm. And restricting what we could do in order to defend ourselves. There's one I wanted to go over. In Georgia in 1848, in Cooper versus Savannah, the Georgia Supreme Court ruled that free persons of color have never been recognized here as citizens. They are not entitled to bear arms. So they it's plain black and white. Free persons of color have never been recognized as citizens, so they are not entitled to the right to bear arms. And that's in 1849. Then you go even further. Because people will say, well, that was so long ago. You know, that was then. That's not now. Okay, I'll go a little bit further.
Uh-huh. you're going really deep down that rabbit hole, I see. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll even go to 1857, less than 10 years later. The High Court upholds slavery since blacks are not citizens. Chief Justice Taney argued if members of the African race were citizens, they would be exempt from the special police regulations applicable to them. It would give to persons of the Negro race full liberty of speech to hold public meetings upon political affairs and to keep and carry arms whenever they want. The U.S. Supreme Court held that descendants of Africans who were imported into this country and sold as slaves were not included nor intended to be included under the word citizens in the Constitution, whether emancipated or not, and remained without rights or privileges except such as those which the government might grant them, thereby upholding slavery. It also held that a slave – sorry, I get on it, man, and I go down that rabbit hole.
And it's okay, but I think that the main part that people need to understand and need to see and or hear, I should say, in this particular situation, and we really do need to research this ourselves, but what we need to see and understand is how the government viewed us or views us, the laws that were created, and the explanation and the rationale behind the laws. The one thing that stood out and kept being repeated over and over was the fact that we were not considered to be citizens of this country. And a lot of people don't realize that some of these laws are still standing laws that, and you look at how is it that someone can shoot you and have minimal consequence applied to them. Some of these laws are being applied today that we really aren't paying attention to. We really need to be more cognizant of. You talked about the 1800s. One of the things I was reading about was in 1873, free black Republicans took over a courthouse in Colfax, Louisiana. And this was after an election dispute. And people don't realize that blacks were Republicans before they were Democrats. And while they did that, and when they took over that courthouse, white Democrats, we don't want to believe it, that we see the Democratic Party as our savior, but actually we were Republicans before we were Democrats, but that's a whole nother show and a whole nother topic. These white Democrats showed up with reinforcements for white supremacists, these vigilantes. These white people would show up in mobs with guns. And when the black men found themselves outnumbered, they surrendered. But the fact of the matter is, we have never been in that position of able to properly defend ourselves. If, you hear and see people who have, put these videos out and talk about, imagine being playing, like I heard one woman say, imagine playing a game on Monopoly and I get 400 goals, 400 chance, I'm playing the game, I get 400 turns before you even get a turn. And then when you finally get a turn, you still have to wait 50 years or 50 turns before, she went on and talked about, basically giving that analogy as far as history. You have to think laws weren't acted like we're talking about now, like you're giving, wonderful description of. These laws were enacted to keep us from being on equal footing. It's not that they just jump out and accuse you or make you do something. They create a law to back up what they're going to do to you. Just like I talked about what happened in 1873 in Louisiana, again, they surrendered, but those white men still attacked and murdered the protesters outside of the courthouse. 150 black people were killed in that whole situation. Three white people were killed. And you can read about stories like that throughout our history where white people in mob-like fashion came and destroyed either a black town or heavily populated black areas. So,
right.
There are
– That's when you start –
Go ahead.
That's when you start getting into Black Wall Street, stuff like that, you know? Because they, how can I put this? Self-sufficiency, Black self-sufficiency is scary to the powers that be. When you start talking about self-sufficiency, you start talking about not depending on the government, right? You start talking about not depending on the government, and I'll just go in and talk about the Panthers, the Black Panthers, and what they stood for, self-sufficiency, you know? And to me, that's very scary to someone who wants to stay in control. Like, if I want to control you and you start talking about doing things on your own, I'm going to be like, no, you need me. You know, you need me because you can't do this. And I really believe that that's a big fear. That's a big fear, the self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
Because they want to prevent, they called it insurrections back then. You know, they wanted to prevent Negro insurrections. But when you start talking about the Panthers and self-sufficiency, that's when you start getting into COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program, and the documents by J. Edgar Hoover, where they wanted to prevent the rise of a Black Messiah. You know, so you always have to look. I always say, look at the time, look at the times. You know, you had Malcolm X, you had Martin, you had the Panthers, and somewhere, somehow, the FBI was always involved. Some way, shape, or form, right?
Of course. And, you know, I was just going to say the realization is we this is more than an hour show. We got about 15 minutes left. So we're going to have to come back and really get back into this. But one of the things that I wanted to do, because there was a question, the chat room is open, and I had a question in there about what is a good gun for home and or concealed carry for someone. And one of the things that really quick, as an instructor, we always teach basically the universal gun rules. I say the universal gun rules, but the cardinal rules for gun safety. And I want to kind of go over that. I hate to cut you off, but I'm just going to jump into that real quick. Because we got fit. I know we ate up a whole hour just talking about the history of Blacks and gun laws, and we haven't even gotten into firearm instruction, what's a good gun to buy. So you're going to have to come back, and we're going to have to, you know, we're going to talk about that and get this brother out here, because this brother's getting ready to get his own thing going as far as with a YouTube channel, you know, the Black Gunslinger. And yeah, and when that jumps off, I'll make sure that we all are in attendance and in support. So with that, like I said, one of the things that gun instructors do, and anyone who is a gun owner should know these four rules. The NRA offers three, but we typically go by with the four, which is basically rule number one, assume all guns are loaded. And like I said, it's easy. You know, a lot of people forget that there may be a gun in, you know, that there may still be a bullet in handling and operating a gun. You've always heard about incidents where people have accidentally shot themselves, and one of the things that they say, they assumed or they thought the gun was unloaded. If you own a firearm, you should know how to properly clear your firearm, how to get the magazine release, hit the magazine release, pull it slide lock back and check into the barrel and make sure that there's nothing in there. Assume all guns are loaded. Don't pick up a firearm and assume that it's empty and just start to play with. Guns are not a toy. That's one thing that we should all should know. Rule number two is never point a gun at anything you're not willing to kill or destroy. You've seen it time and time again in videos where people are playing. I've seen countless number of videos where individuals are at the gun range and they're playing with the gun. The last video that I saw, a guy was looking at a what we call a hang fire, where he put his hand in front of the gun several times to see what was going on with the gun, trying to clear it. And he put his hand in the gun and held there too long, and the gun fired and shot himself in the hand. So you never want to point the gun at anyone or anything that you're not willing to kill or destroy. Make sure that you do not point that gun at anything you are not willing to shoot, even if you think it's not loaded. And again, people get shot for playing with guns and thinking that they didn't follow rule number one, assuming that all guns are loaded. But then number two, you pointed it at something, you were unintentionally shot. You know, so we want to err on the side of caution. Make sure that, you know, the easiest way to keep everyone around you safe is if you just don't point it. Always keep your pointed. We teach people to keep their gun pointed downrange or pointed at the intended target. So that's rule number two. Rule number three is keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made a decision to shoot. Once you put your, if you're intending, you know, you've heard that old saying, if you pull your gun, you better intend to use it. And a lot of people, you know, I've heard that many a time from older people because, you know, a lot of them, their experiences or whatever the case may be, that's what their intention was. If you pull that gun, you better use it. And that's what they basically say. But in this situation, keep your finger off the trigger. Once you draw your firearm, and especially if you're on range, you keep your hand or keep your finger in a position along the slide of the gun where it will not, where you don't have the opportunity to put your finger on the trigger and pull it. And I can't tell you countless times I've been on the range with someone giving instruction and they're excited because they shot the target and they hit close to the center of the target. They almost hit the X and they turn around. They almost point that you have to stop them from pointing the gun at you and you remind them to take their finger off the trigger. It's an easy rule to forget. And I always tell people all the time that the trigger guard and the trigger itself are like a magnet. You always find your finger on that gun or on that trigger. Rule number four, be sure of your target and what's beyond it. This is the last basic rule of safety, gun safety. What you want to understand is that bullet doesn't magically stop when you hit the target. And in most cases, that bullet will hit your target and go through your target. If you are not, when I say target, that could be in a situation, a crisis situation, where you are able to shoot someone and that target, which is your intended target, or you're a hunter and you shoot your prey and it hits your prey or your intended target, it hits your target and goes through your target. And let's say maybe a couple of hundred yards down the road, it hits a barn, kills a stock animal or somebody that was inside, or it goes through a window and hits a person. So you need to make sure that you're using good gun safe, you know, applying the gun safety rules. I guess that's the best way to say it. As far as the question, going back to the question of what's a good gun to buy or what's a good gun to use, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes on that one, Will, if you want to jump in on that one, and then I'll come back in with my thoughts. And I saw someone post in the room said something about not staying away from a 22 long rifle. I'm going to say a 22 long rifle would do some damage if you know what you're doing. And it's not to say that you need to be an expert.
Right.
If you're using a 22, you can hurt someone. That's the best way to put it.
Right.
So
the question question was, what's the best gun for home defense? Or
it was, yeah, the question is, what is a good gun for home and or concealed carry? for someone squeamish or seem too much on the other side of the gun. Now I'm kind of concerned because I'm thinking maybe you might be running from the law.
right. Man, okay. So what I generally tell people when they ask me what's a good gun or this, that, and third, what gun should I buy? I don't give recommendations. For the simple fact, guns cost money. I would never recommend a gun to someone and they go out and buy this gun, spend $400 or $500, whatever, and they hate this gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd be like, well, you told me to do this. Nope. Nah. Because you'll just have an expensive paperweight. So my advice would be go to a range, try out as many different firearms as you can. Find one that fits you. A good buddy of mine, he talks about, can't think of the name of it. I think it's Shoot Point Blank. He'll get mad at me if I don't get this right. But they do a class. They do an intro class where you can try out a bunch of different firearms. So that would be my advice. Try out as many firearms as you can. Find one that works for you, because it's all relative. It's all relative to you. So that's how I found the gun that I have. I tried out several, and the one that I have, it just fit me. So that's my advice.
Yeah. Okay. And from my point of view, I agree with you the same way. I get that question all the time. One of the things that I tell people to consider when you're going in to purchase a firearm, consider reliability. How reliable is that firearm? We live in the age of social media. So with that being said, you have the opportunity to research. YouTube is one of the best places to research about firearms. Anything from the conversation on the topic of pocket pistols to, again, 22 long rifle firearms, what they're used for and what they, what they're doing. But you want to check out the reliability. You want to research about accuracy. You don't want to buy a gun that you are using and they're not, you're not as accurate. But in most cases, accuracy is dependent on the person using the gun, not always on the firearm itself. Find a gun that's easy to use for beginners. Something that's not so complex with so many, new firearm users aren't always knowledgeable about what they're using. They normally want to point, pull the trigger, and that's it. They're not necessarily making the determination between they don't always make the decision between whether it's they want a hammer or a strike of fire, a double action or a single action, whether it's a strike of fire pistol. You want something that's easy to use and you don't have to, that doesn't require, I guess, a lot of research to the point that you're willing to put it down and not use it at all. As you become more familiar with your firearm, you typically will get into a groove of understanding what kind of firearm you own, what you like about it, what you don't like about it, and what you're willing to look for in the next one. Because most times people will buy one and realize they'll try someone else's and they fall in love with that one, so they want another one or they want to replace that one. You want to find something that you can defend your home and or person. Some guns are good for home. You'll be amazed how many guns are made. They're good. They're what we call home defense pistols. You hear a lot of people say, well, I don't take this gun out of the house. It stays in the house. I use it as my home defense, versus something that they carry on their person and they keep it on their person, or they keep it, it's for home and for what we call everyday carry. They carry it in, they obtain the proper license or permits to carry and they take it on the home. You want to find something that's durable. You don't want to find something that's fragile. You drop it and the pin, something falls, the firing hammer or firing pin is broken and you have to replace it. You want to find these things that are easy, and you want to make sure that your gun is able to withstand certain things. I'm a rough and tumble guy, so I want to make sure that my firearm is rough and tumble along, you know, as well. Ease of use. We talked about that earlier. You know, something that's easy for beginners, but again, something that's easy for you to use with that isn't too complicated. Something that you can take to the range and learn. I always tell people, make sure that you're not getting something because you saw it on John Wick or Rambo that you're running to the store to purchase. That's not what you're doing. You want to look at the long-term track record of an organization or a group or the company that makes it. Do they make good guns? Do they have a good reputation, a solid reputation? And this one is more so geared, the next one is geared towards, I have to mess with the Glock fanboys. Well, I don't know if you fall in that category, but
man,
aftermarket accessories.
Man.
I was just saying, but aftermarket accessories. Glocks are one of the reasons that Glocks are popular is for the aftermarket accessories. People are able to take different parts and upgrade their gun or make it a little more accessible to them. You'll see some people with parts of, you know, on a gun that you don't understand, but they know what it's for. They, you know, the trigger was, you know, they wanted a trigger that has less, you know, weight to it when you pull it. All this other stuff. They changed the sights out so that they go from the standard iron sights or standard three dot white sights to fiber optic sights or the red dot reticle. You want to, you know, and lastly, availability. You don't want to purchase a firearm that's going to take 6 months for you to get. You also have to obey your state laws, but also if you're looking for a firearm and you're looking for something to carry and you want to do it more immediately, my advice is to make sure that you're purchasing something that's available to you and you're not having to wait for extended periods of time. Most cases, you purchase a firearm in a store, you have to meet the state requirements. In the state of Mississippi, you fill out the paperwork, you can walk out of the store. So with that being said, you know, and again, well, we're going to have to come back and do, you know, do a part two because this is a bigger topic than
what
we've been talking about. But again, I want to thank everyone for being a part of it. We have about 90 seconds left. So I'm going to close it out and we'll set up another show and we'll come back and we'll definitely do a part two. And I see some of the comments in there, but again, I want to thank everyone for participating in the show tonight. Thank those people for being a part of tonight. Will, thank you specifically for taking your time and being and stepping out and coming on this platform and talking about firearms. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you
for those of
me,
you who are listening. Not a problem. Not a problem. But again, thank you guys again for listening. And that's pretty much the end of our show. Again, you can find us on Facebook, Common Sense Conversations. Again, you can find us on Twitter at Ain't So Common, and we'll be around. You can definitely find us here. So again, thank you again for being a part of the show. Appreciate you, and that's it. Again, have a good night. Take care.